She's ready to die on the ground. Sorry, I'm going to okay, we are going to start. For those of you online, which there's a lot of you, for those of you online, there's a lot going on here too. We're about half and half today, half online, half in this room, and there's lots of conversations going on. But we're going to get going because we have a pretty full agenda. So thank you to those of you that weren't able to attend in person, hopped online for us. We appreciate it. We're at a quorum, which makes me happy. That means we can do the business of the board, so we'll keep moving forward. I'm sorry, I have spread layout. Those of you that are also online, I like the gavel that is in front of me, and I just scared several people when I just that's why all this. There's a lot of commotion. As far as new business, welcome into 2025. This is our first meeting. All of our meetings for the year are calendared, so please do your best to be aware of those as you conduct your day jobs. For those of us in the industry, be aware of those meetings in April, July, and October. We did have approval of finally approval from the Netflix office for Michelle Hill from Clyde Companies, who's replacing Dan Walker. And then Stephen Olson, who's here with us today, is also finally been approved. So we're so glad that he is an official board member. He's been working, I think you were at last week, and he's officially official. So we're grateful for that. And Michelle has been with us today. She asked to be excused. And then the next item on my list of things to talk about is just recruitment. I can tell you we have about four applications pending right now, and about three more that are applying. Well, I've been actively having conversations with recruiting people. So I'm hoping actually by April we have about six or seven new board members that will be.
Are you trying to handpick future board members, or do you want to keep
them? Oh, no. I actually have a giant note here that says if you have recommendations, please let me know. Yeah. I would say we are selective based on recommendation. Mostly, I will tell you things that I look at. Make sure we have representation through the entire state. That's really important. Making sure we get critical industries that drive the economy in the state is also important. There are mandated positions from the law that require that we have representation. I will openly and honestly tell you that we need state representation to get 7% of the board. And not having a big right now. So maybe have someone that they're, I'm someone I'm going to talk to, but if anybody has a recommendation of someone in one of their representatives in their area that still might be a good fit on this board, please let me know. I'm happy to talk to them. So hopefully that answers your questions, but we absolutely take recommendations. Also, secretly looking for somebody, not secretly, openly looking for somebody in agriculture. Specifically, if we find somebody from agriculture, that would be great. We don't have great representation of work from ag, but we don't right now. We need something from ag. Ag manufacturing, ag finish, whatever. That would be good. Okay, that's the one. We need something from ag. So, thank you. And with that, I need the approval of the minutes from our third meeting. Just before we do that, Bill, can you set us up in 2 seconds? Reset it open. I didn't find any issues. I did on the last week. So I just need a motion to approve the minutes from our board meeting on October 3rd.
Motion to approve the minutes.
Thank you, Sean. Ken is going to second it. Any discussion? Okay, all in favor to approve the minutes from the October 3rd board meeting, say aye.
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 Opposed? You can raise your hand online if they're opposed to the minutes. Just look like it's such a lot of stuff. Okay, moving on. Next thing is the one-stop recertification for the Metro Employment Center. We talked about that in our October meeting. Dave and Deborah. Deborah and I were able to go to the Metro Research would you guys like to share anything?
Yeah, I'll just share that it was, like you said, the weather got short on the internet. Now, that's just such a unique facility with the profile of clients that are coming into that facility. It was eye-opening. I just get goosebumps talking about it. For me, personally, it's a great experience as a board member to be able to observe the employees in action at the center and what they do to support those in need. Because it's adjacent and near facility, that. And it was humbling to see some of the symptoms people trying to touch the facility, and then more so it was humbling to see the workers in the facility, what they really need to support each of those individuals and the patients around the knowledge that they have around offering solutions and alternatives, and even you know, what I would describe as the software skills to be able to navigate what's required to for that might be able to understand, focus, and get through solutions. So I was in awe.
Yeah, I mean, that's the number of things I could have pointed out how they just watched everything that the employees are doing. Just, I never just having an understanding of the needs of the client that comes into the facility within his institution, amongst others. You know, just having, and even just the emotional and mental strength of the employees to kind of navigate that member's, you know, just the person at the front. This was very engaged with the someone came in with one question that turned into like 11 questions over time, and she was just answered one by one every time, and you can ask her some questions and get more definite understanding. And that first walked away, I thought, oh my god, this was came in and picked it in, so I got so much more. Thank you so much. I'm like, wow, I don't even know where to start with how she answered all the questions. But yeah, just that kind of knowledge is how they're able to navigate, you know, even just the most challenging type of client to work in there. Understand how the needs are, how to do it, and how to work with it. It was pretty great.
Yeah, it was so good. And from an HR perspective, I'm actually asking a lot of the employees. I asked the manager there, there's got to be, like, do you have a quiet room? Do you have downtime? Like, seriously, I worked for the person that I was shadowing because it was just nonstop. I'm like, you've got to have a break to just, like, breathe for a second. And they obviously got that all figured out, but it was pretty. It's just totally different. And I've been in some of these centers. That's probably my fifth or seventh center that I was certified in. All of these different, always busy, but that was on a whole other level of what goes on there. And the genuine concern and love for the people that walk in the door, because, I mean, I'll just give you one example, and it was the sweetest thing. And it was like watching, like, a grandparent or maybe a parent that's older come in and literally had, like, a stack of probably 20 different mail. But at that age, it's just like, I don't know what this is. I don't even know what to do with this mail. And the greeter at the very beginning just patiently went through every single, didn't open it with them, but just could tell from it, like, junk mail. You were just like, this one's from us letting you know that X, Y, and Z happened. This one is, you know, from the state. You know, she just patiently went through every single letter of mail with this gentleman to help him fill it. He was making sure he was covering all those bases. Which, in my opinion, is definitely above and beyond what the job service is. So, I have a little more to say about that, but they passed, as far as we're concerned, with flying colors. So, I need Deborah or James, if you'd like to make a motion, should we see the head on the council center?
I'll make a motion to be certified.
And any second. I second it. Any more discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so moved. In addition to that, because it was so impactful, obviously three of us were very moved. That will be our field trip this year. Liz promised me she would figure it out. So we're slating July as our meeting, so watch for just a slight change to the north for that meeting. One thing that I'll make sure that we try and figure out how to do this. So just watch for July to be a little bit different. But relocated through the way we're doing the certifications now is a little bit different. And we're job shadowing, testing, and scenarios, which for me was amazing to just kind of watch things happen. And we'll be doing that with the group so you can get a real feel for what's going on. Metro Center. So July can be a little bit different, but that will be, because I like culture, so I'll get them for the year. Thank you guys, we will appreciate it. So. Question? Great. Moving on. I'm so excited about this. Yay! Okay, I've been waiting for this, I'm so excited. So we are going to have a discussion about the new Utah Registered Apprenticeship for Teachers. So, and I think Christina's online, right? Christina is online, and she's going to be giving us a presentation on the new registered apprenticeship for teachers. So outside the box. I love it. Let's do it. Christina?
Hi there. Can you all hear me okay? Perfect. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. And I did also share this presentation, so hopefully that can be sent out to all of you today. Okay. Perfect. It looks like you can see that. All right. Well, thank you so much for letting me have some of your time during your meeting. I really appreciate the excitement surrounding the Utah Registered Apprenticeship Program for Teachers. Just a little bit of background on myself is I am coming to the Utah State Board of Education. I'm at my halfway point at this moment, so 6 months in. Prior to that, I was an administrator at Spectrum Academy. I had been there for 17 years, so have some experience with teacher preparation. I was our Apple director and also have a good lot of experience in the area of personalized competency-based learning, which just being a competency-based program, hopefully you can see those elements throughout the program as we really do try to create a new space and elevate those who maybe previously weren't able to access an ed prep program. So please feel free to put questions in the chat. Stop me at any time. Because you have access to the program, and I am the type of person who doesn't love when people read presentations to me, I'm going to give you a little bit more of a high-level description of the program, touch on a few key points, but then I'd like to leave it open for some questions and see if that will help everyone to really kind of take away from this information what's going to be best from your perspective. So about the Utah Registered Apprenticeship Program, we've had a team here at the state level who have been exploring the idea of registered apprenticeship for teachers since December of 22. Went ahead and received some Department of Labor funding through the State Apprenticeship Expansion Formula Grant. We're at this point really trying to get the message out about our program so that we can really work with our legislators to see if we can obtain some state funding and really sustain the program moving forward beyond the length of the grant that we have now. Currently, we're in the process of enrolling program partners, and I'll speak to those partners as we get a little further into the training. or the information session. So what the apprenticeship is doing is we're really trying to take the best of the apprenticeship frame and overlap that with an educator prep program within the state of Utah. Specifically, our target audience is we're looking at those individuals who don't already have a bachelor's degree. As we know, there are already two existing licensing pathways within the state, and so this becomes a third option for those individuals who don't meet qualifications or have the opportunity to access those programs as they exist. So here is our visual for what licensing pathway in Utah looks like right now. So we have our center lane, which is that university college preparation pathway, typically 4 years to complete the program. Can start anywhere from $60,000, and we know certainly higher than that. With our alternative pathway to professional educator licensing programs, local school districts and charters can go ahead and create the program, facilitate that based off the state's model to provide an opportunity for those with bachelor's degrees to obtain a general education license. And then for anyone who's interested in a special education license that already has a bachelor's degree, they could participate at within the state's special education APL program. So this then now shifts our interest into supporting those individuals who don't have the means to apply and participate effectively in either of the two existing pathways. So currently the URAP has two phases. We have our pre-apprenticeship program, which is really supporting an individual to earn those 42 general education credits or the equivalent of associate's degree while they're working in a school, learning the role of an instructional paraeducator, so really setting the foundation of classroom support, prior to them moving on to a full apprenticeship. Once they have their coursework completed and they have that full apprenticeship or pre-apprenticeship completed, an individual can then go ahead and apply for an apprenticeship. So it is not a requirement to be a pre-apprentice in order to apply for apprentice. And so we just want to make sure that we're providing the support for someone to even meet the qualifications to apply for that full apprenticeship role. Within the Utah Registered Apprenticeship Program, that individual has anywhere from 1 to 3 years after they've completed their first 2 years of college coursework to complete the apprenticeship program. And we're trying to really offer the time, space, and funding support to help someone not only through bachelor's degree completion, but to make sure they also have those opportunities to complete whatever content competencies are required for their licensing area, but also any endorsements that are required for their licensing area. And one key component about Utah's registered apprenticeship model is that the apprentice will never serve as the teacher of record. When we're looking at our other two licensing pathways, particularly with our APL programs, that teacher candidate is immediately put into the space of being that teacher of record. And having been a teacher who came through an alternative pathway, that was my experience as well. So with the traditional method for student teaching, it is usually their mentor teacher and in some cases the intern teacher who can serve as that teacher of record. But for the URAP, as this program does extend from 1 to 3 years, the apprentice is paired up with a qualified, what we're calling a mentor journey worker teacher, so borrowing that language directly from workforce development and the apprenticeship framework, that the apprentice will never be in the classroom or be in that space alone. But they will be learning everything for how to be a teacher from top to bottom, including lesson planning, lesson delivery, data collection, data analysis, student plan development, IEPs, 504s, behavior intervention plans. So we can really conceptualize the apprenticeship as an extension of a student teaching experience, going from that culminating event at the end of a traditional educator prep program to over the course of a few years, allowing that apprentice to go learn side by side with a qualified mentor journey worker teacher. So for Utah's model, what we're looking for our pre-apprentices is that they are hired onto a partner local education agency, a charter, or a district in the role of any sort of support, so allowing that individual to have time during the week to work with their paraeducator journey worker. The reason for that is that serves the apprenticeship framework of the on-the-job learning, is they're going to be learning the Utah standards for instructional paraeducators and then demonstrating their development of those skills. The college coursework they will be focusing on will be for those first 2 years, those general education courses, and then that puts them in a space to apply for a full apprenticeship. So the apprentices themselves immediately jump into that learn and earn model, which would be the progressively increasing wages as they demonstrate more and more of those general teacher preparation competencies. It is a competency-based license, so there's not a requirement if that the LEA, as this is an employer-driven program, has the opportunity to be flexible with how much time that that apprentice is assigned to the apprenticeship hours. So it could be full-time, it could be part-time. We really want to make sure that we're supporting LEAs to develop their teachers versus kind of requiring them to create maybe an extra position. So I actually had a wonderful discussion this morning with a few superintendents from down south and really explained that we're not looking to require that anyone adds a position to their budget, but rather consider a conversion for a portion of those hours so that we can have the apprentices really focus on learning how to be a teacher. Again, they'll work with their qualified journey worker, mentor journey worker teacher. They won't serve as the teacher of record. Their mentor journey worker teacher will. And we're also requesting that the colleges and universities consider developing a method for providing coursework credit towards the bachelor's degree based upon skills that are demonstrated while the apprentice is in the classroom, demonstrating those competencies and their on-the-job learning. So just kind of a linear outline of what that flow of activity could look like. If someone were to move from the pre-apprenticeship to the apprenticeship, they could complete that apprenticeship in 1 to 2 years. Again, it all is based on that college coursework. We don't want anyone to get the misunderstanding that the apprenticeship is looking to license teachers without that degree. That related technical instruction, even within apprenticeship framework, is so critical to the success of that apprentice that what we're doing is we're really trying to put that framework together with our educator prep expectations and allow for an individual to, again, extend out that student teaching experience. While someone is a pre-apprentice, we'll be able to offer them up to $4,000 a year for up to 2 years to cover their related instruction costs, so tuition, fee, materials, whatever that might look like. At that point, they have met the qualifications to apply for a full apprenticeship. Again, it's not required to be in a pre-apprentice. But then once we have someone who is accepted as at an LEA, is hired as an apprentice, they're going to receive increasing wages based on the number of competencies that they continue to demonstrate while they're in the on-the-job learning working with their mentor journey worker teacher. And the role of the mentor journey worker teacher is new and different from what we would consider a more traditional mentor teacher. In the space of an apprenticeship, that journey worker really is the individual who's watching and supporting the development of that apprentice's skills. So we really want to engage that individual in being a part of the measure of those skills as they develop through the year, whereas a traditional mentor teacher really is almost protected from being part of that evaluation space to really preserve that relationship. But that relationship has an opportunity to expand over several years for an apprentice. So we really want to make sure we engage them as part of that the competency demonstration. They will have an IPLP, an individual professional learning plan, and that's going to outline which coursework they still need to complete in order to finish their full bachelor's program and which competencies they need to develop as they move through their program. The apprentice can have up to $10,000 a year for up to 3 years to cover those related instruction costs. And then at the end of the program, if we have an individual, again, who goes from pre-apprentice to apprentice, they will complete the program with a bachelor's degree, with a professional educator license, and potentially up to 5 years of targeted classroom experience and ready to serve as a teacher of record within their own classroom. The areas that we can license through this program are elementary, secondary special education, preschool special education, deaf education, and early childhood education. And as I mentioned, we currently have the apprenticeship phase of the program is up and running. We're accepting partner applications from universities and school districts for that phase of the program and also for the pre-apprentice. And we're very much looking into the opportunity to connect the apprenticeship program to what exists in our CTE pathway at the state level of the teaching as a profession pathway and seeing what we can do to really elevate those individuals. This last school year, I believe we had over 400 students, high school students in the state of Utah, complete that CTE pathway. So how amazing if we were able to then shift them directly into a pre-apprenticeship and then an apprenticeship. And if they were participating in concurrent enrollment while they were in high school, that really could almost expedite their opportunity to become a teacher sooner, but doing so with dedicated classroom experience. Financial support is going to be really critical, because what we did as we developed the Utah model is we took a good long look at the results of our educator engagement surveys, our exit surveys, but also the team that's been in place since December 2022 has really taken the opportunity to look at the models within other states, learn from their very best practices that they've identified, but really asking those kind of direct questions of, like, what were those lessons that you learned immediately? What do you wish you had changed from the get-go? What do you know that you need to move forward and make those adjustments with? And we can say pretty confidently that we've taken most of those lessons learned and woven them into our model to make sure that we're addressing all of those needs. One of those big needs certainly is financial support. So for the pre-apprentice, again, they can receive the funding support for their related instruction. For the apprentice, we actually were very proud that we wrote into board rule that a level one apprentice, every apprentice will start at a minimum of $18.21 an hour. And to support the LEAs is we're able to reimburse the LEA for half of those minimums that we've identified here. So if an LEA decides, I want to start my level one apprentice at $23 an hour, we at USBE would still allocate the funds of half of the $18.21 and require that the LEA pays the difference. But again, when we're really looking at sort of converting a current position, if you have a paraprofessional, if you have a paraeducator in your classroom already spending time, and you know this person really could serve as a teacher and be developed into a high-quality support for students leading a classroom, the amount that you're paying, $14, maybe $15 an hour for that person to be your classroom support, that amount actually decreases if we bring them on as an apprentice, because then the LEA is paying about $9 and change, whereas we're going to cover the other portion of that hourly rate. And let's see. At this point, I do, within the presentation, have pretty detailed information about the two separate phases of the program, the pre-apprentices and the apprentices. I'm happy to go through it, but I don't know quite how much time that I have, and I don't want to take all the time. Again, hopefully you will have access to the presentation, and I can actually scan to the end if you want to grab the QR code that allow you to see the slides in detail. But I can also pause and take questions at this point. So which direction would you like us to go?
But I also have to be conscious about that.
Any questions at this point?
Yeah, I had this one for Christina. I was just curious on what the timeline is. I mean, this is a big deal. And how long did it take from start to finish to get this approved?
To get this approved as in bringing partners on board or developing the entire program? Sorry, I couldn't hear that.
Developing the entire program.
The entire program. Well, had been a lot of work done prior to me joining the agency back in July. And so when I came on board in July, we were drafting the first, writing the first draft of the board rule in August. So it went to the Law and Licensing Committee in August, and it was approved in September. And so come September, we already had our approval from the Department of Labor as a registered apprenticeship for teachers. And then in December, we received our expansion on that approval to include pre-apprentices. So it's been quite a few years to really identify the general frame of the program. But as far as all of the details and everything that would come to, like, come down to the exact activities of each of the partners, that has taken just the last 6 months. And I can go through super briefly and just show you who the different partners in the program are. They're similar for both, but with some slight variation. Did that answer your question? Perfect. Okay. Let me run through the partners really quick. Qualifications for both a pre-apprentice and apprentice are that the individual is at least 18 years old, because we do have to have their consent that they take and pass a background check. Both individuals have to be employed in a partner LEA, so that means that local school district or the charter school does need to apply to become a partner with the program and then receive that award from us at the state level as we serve as the sponsor. For the pre-apprentice and the apprentice, they both need to have their high school diploma. And where it differs is the apprentice does need to have that associate's degree or the equivalent in order to apply for the full apprenticeship. partners in the program. So the employer partner within the program, and again, following the apprenticeship model, is that's your employer. That really is, as this is an employer-driven program, the LEAs drive a good portion of this program and really get to tailor what does that look like within their school. For the pre-apprenticeship, they have to commit to hiring the individual in whatever position possible, but commit to allowing them to have time within the classroom to work with their paraeducator journey worker. They'll be responsible for 100% of that hourly rate, whereas that does differ when we're looking at the apprenticeship, whereas we're going to reimburse the LEA for half their hourly rate. We want constant communication amongst all the partners so that way we're always working in effort to support that apprentice, that pre-apprentice, to success. So we've gone ahead and drafted out consistent communication opportunities. That way we're always talking about our pre-apprentices and our apprentices' spaces, that way we can do some collaborating and problem solving, having some virtual community of practice every month. But also making sure that as we are assessing the pre-apprentice and the apprentice in their competency development, we are having a very open conversation that includes those individuals. So really trying to shift the idea of a measurement or an evaluation to be, we really need to just kind of see where you're at now and where else do you need to go and how can we help you get there. The LEA will also be responsible for identifying a mentoring plan, which really will include how much time they are spending within the classroom for the pre-apprentice, and then for the apprentice, ensuring that they're paired up with their qualified mentor journey worker.
Hey, Christina.
Yes. I'm so sorry, I didn't hear that comment. Yes, of course. I'm so sorry. So an LEA is a local education agency, and that would be the school district or the charter school. Yes, of course. Thank you for asking. The other next level of the apprenticeship partner for both the pre-apprentice and the apprentice is having that journey worker. So for the pre-apprentice, we're looking at a paraeducator journey worker, making sure that someone's in the space to support this individual, actively working with them in a classroom with students every week so that they can develop those standards outlined for instructional paraeducators. As far as qualifications, we want to make sure that it's someone who really has demonstrated that they are that high-quality paraeducator. So we're looking for them to at least meet the same minimum requirements for someone who's classified as a high-quality paraprofessional for a Title I or for a special education setting, and that would be having either an associate's degree or passing one of the three paraprofessional assessments. We've also recommended to our LEAs, our districts, and our charters that they go ahead and maybe consider a few additional qualifications as they're selecting this person to help develop a future teacher. So it's really helpful when they know how basic word processing skills, demonstrating that professionalism, and so forth. Just some more information on which assessments are available for someone to be qualified as a paraeducator journey worker. I believe all three, if not two for certain, of these assessments are free. And so it's not something that would have to come out of pocket for a paraeducator, but it is something that a school district or charter may want to look into supporting that person to meet those qualifications. Lastly, I think we're almost at the end for the pre-apprentices, is they'll be evaluated on those standards for instructional paraeducators. And so what we've done is we've created a rubric to conduct that evaluation. And the rubric that will be done on the pre-apprentice level very closely resembles the evaluation that will be done on the apprentice level. So anyone who shifts from the pre-apprentice space to the apprentice space really is going to have an easy transition and anticipating how their competencies are going to be evaluated and measured. And we're requesting that it happens twice per year, once at the halfway point and once at the end. If a school decides that they'd like to evaluate someone sooner, maybe they feel like they have a lot of experience under their belt and they'd like to actually move them up higher on that pay scale, we're going to certainly encourage that. I will never deter anyone from wanting to compensate their employees at a higher level. Related instruction partners, those are colleges and universities who will be providing for the pre-apprentice that general education coursework, and then for our apprentices, whatever coursework they need to complete their bachelor's degree, and again, doing so in the area that they choose to obtain their license in. For the pre-apprentices, that would be financial support for $4,000 a year up to 2 years. For the apprentice, $10,000 a year for up to 3 years. And then just lastly, outlining the benefits for the pre-apprentice, as we're really trying to offer that hands-on experience, and the advantages and the benefits also are the same for that apprentice, is having that time to work with a qualified professional. So when we're thinking about an apprentice, we're thinking about someone who's a welder or a carpenter. They're working with a licensed, a certified professional hands-on daily to get that experience in the setting in which they're going to be working in as they become a professional themselves. We want to offer that same opportunity to our pre-apprentices and our apprentices. So taking that student teaching experience that typically can be anywhere from 8 to 14 weeks, one time at the end of their educator prep program, we're now extending that over to 3 years. And so providing the career advancement, allowing for them to have those really wonderful qualifiers on a resume to say, yeah, I've been an apprentice, I've been in a classroom for 3 years, put them side by side with someone who's gone through a more traditional program. The person who goes through a traditional student teaching experience doesn't have that opportunity to kind of speak to that length of time spent in a classroom learning how to be a teacher. Also providing that mentorship and support, flexible learning. We have a lot of our universities who are dedicated to offering their entire programs online or classes outside of the traditional K-12 school day so that the pre-apprentices and apprentices can access the instruction, which we all agree as partners is so critical to their success. And then extending that time in the classroom and being very mindful of, we're going to teach these wonderful individuals how to support in the classroom and then how to lead a classroom. So the information for the apprentices is pretty similar. I'm going to actually just run to the end of this and just kind of go over the next steps. So for anyone who's interested in becoming a pre-apprentice or apprentice, they will need to be in contact with their local school district or charter school. They can also reach out to me and sign up for the listserv. I'm keeping one specifically for those interested candidates. And as positions come open, I'm going to be sending out those openings to that listserv and allowing all of our interested individuals to apply. I'll also be posting those job openings on the federal and state apprenticeship job boards. For an employer partner, so again, a school district or charter, they need to be in touch with me. I really want to ensure that we have that one-on-one meeting to discuss their needs and see how their needs can really pair well with what we can offer through the URAPT, and kind of a similar process for some a college or university. And I think at this point I've spoken to every college and university in our state who's able to provide instruction either at the pre-apprentice level, the apprentice level, or both. And that's kind of the gist of everything. So are there any other questions I can answer?
Yeah, you can keep that up. I've heard you present this a number of times. I do think there's some positive aspects of you explaining the difference between URAP and Apple, because I think there are individuals that could be impacted positively by both of those programs.
Mm-hmm.
So could you share what happened?
Yeah, so the difference between the URAPT and the Apple, to be really specific, is kind of that one qualifier of someone who has a bachelor's degree. Really, the Apple program is going to be the best pathway for them, because at that point they've met all of their college credits, but what they really need to focus on is the content and the pedagogy for the license area that they're interested in. And so anyone who's enrolling in an Apple program will get their own individual professional learning plan that's going to outline, okay, I want to be a secondary English teacher. That's going to look very different for someone in an Apple program versus someone who's going into an Apple program who wants to be an elementary teacher. Now when we kind of take those two same interest areas and shift them to apprentices, they don't quite yet have their bachelor's degree. This program is going to allow them to do the same technical learning, so taking the coursework that would get them the knowledge to be a high school English teacher or an elementary teacher while they're also working in a classroom with an elementary teacher or with a high school English teacher. So that's one of the qualifications of an apprenticeship for someone to serve in that mentor journey worker teacher space for the apprentice is they have to have a license in the same area that that apprentice is seeking their own license. I'm not going to put a someone looking to be a high school English teacher in an elementary classroom. We really want to make sure that this is tailored to their particular area of interest and that we're also really providing a good service to someone who's taking on that role of the mentor journey worker teacher. They're essentially gaining a co-student teacher for the duration of several years versus a couple weeks at the end of our beginning of the school year. So I hope that information helps.
Yes, thank you.
Other questions? And Christina, my understanding is you have about 25 already enrolled. Is that correct? How many school districts does that?
So I'm not at 25 quite yet, but I am able to enroll 25 apprentices this year and then about 40 pre-apprentices. I have 14 LEAs, school districts or charters on board, but I actually have a few of them who have come on as a partner but are looking to wait to actually bring on an apprentice till next school year. They really just want to get their training in place, make sure that they get the flow of their procedures outlined before they actually take on individuals. So I think at this point, if I can remember my count correctly, I'm probably just under 30 pre-apprentices that we've awarded to different districts. And then apprentices, I do believe I'm like about 15 to 18 at this point. And I really am so grateful for how gracious the districts have been. Even our larger districts are requesting, like, I'll take one, I'll take two, because they realize we're limited this year. And that's actually, again, one of the recommendations that came from looking at other programs around different states is we had a few states who were very ambitious and took on hundreds of apprentices, but their attrition rate was very high by the time their first year ended. So the recommendation from the field was really be a little bit more conservative, be a little bit more mindful, get your processes in place, and make sure there's a lot of communication with your partners so that way it's constantly evolving to meet the needs of everyone involved and then helping that apprentice to get to the end of the program.
Thank you. Any other questions? Questions online? If you are online and not presenting, will you please make sure your microphone is muted unless we're voting on something? Christina, thank you so much. I know, especially over the last 5 years, 6 years, teacher retention and getting teachers into the classroom has been a struggle for a lot of districts in the state. So this is a really interesting avenue for us to keep expanding the talent pool in that area. So, and getting into it. Thank you.
Yeah. I appreciate the time and the opportunity to kind of share the information. So however you all would like to share, I invite you to do so, because I think the more we can get that word out, the more that we can just maintain and really support those who are interested, but who kind of maybe have that same mentality of, well, college is not for me, I can't afford it, and kind of, you know, so on and so forth that we've heard for quite a while. So we're really trying to increase access and elevate within communities. And just really honor the people who are already dedicated to those schools. So, again, thank you so much. I appreciate your time. You have my contact information. Everyone's welcome to reach out to me at any point. I've had such wonderful feedback from the presentations I've done. I've had individuals going, so on a personal level, I have, like, a niece or I have a daughter. And I was like, yep, I have a few kids myself, so I hear you. So thank you again all. Have a wonderful day.
The next book is Performance Outcomes with Erin, Lindsay, and Stephanie, and we have these each year presented. So in a while, the student needs fully new information. In your packets, you have something that looks like this. If you're online, it looks like this. In the corner,
yes.
And you have to talk loud.
Yes, ma'am.
Responsibility.
Fine. So we are a veteran committee for the program today, and every year we will put out a report for the competitors for the program. So this is the data of how we make children play in the future. And we're going to explain employment
achieving main goal of the week. So there are 6 performance measures that we do every single year. They're kind of covered at the bottom of the page in the description of what each of those measures are. They cover specifics about maintaining healthy purpose, maintaining employment, keeping employment, what their wages look like, after they attain employment, and then just what benefits they earn and how progress they make for those potential. So there's a lot of detailed definition described to each of those performance measures, but I have a very high level of memory on each of them. And so after 2 years, each of them negotiate achieve for each of these measures. We negotiate those calls with data from the previous year, expected outcome data, information based on the statistics that we serve, and also the we negotiate those measures with our departments. We do it at the beginning of the negotiation process day one, so that's at the right day one to kick off the negotiation. And we negotiate with 2 program years, which program year is defined as July 1st to June 30th. And they start backwards a little bit, where the program year title is based on when the program year starts. Program year 2023 started July 1st, 2023, and finished in June 30th, 2023. We are just reporting out on the measures now because it takes us about a quarter after the year ends, gather all the data we need, get all the fulfillment outcome information, get everything prepared to make sure we return all of our customers. So it's a lot of data, a lot of process that we want to share with you today. So you can see each of the 4 program programs listed below. Just because you may not know the goals of the worker and you are kind of our workers and education programs that focus on training and education certification. And then our rising tech program sort of follows the job of the education.
About all of the stuff that we happening there is possible with the department's education to be office director. Just wanted to share some details about the VR program and our performance this year. So we served over 14,000 individuals with disabilities, and our performance numbers reflect both the youth and adult population of people with disabilities that we serve. Over 4,000 individuals exited our program after they received services. So for the first year, we're looking at the employment exit, the employment numbers after closure. We were successful in meeting our target. One of our goals and priorities is to continue to push that performance and making sure that our clients are retaining their employment and being some of the chat. So, things that we have noticed in talking with our clients and getting feedback after the exit, people that we're working with have ongoing disabilities that are going to continue. And a lot of times they're struggling and it's a recruiting issue. So, within the LEADUS team, we're doing a lot of training and support for employers and hiring and retaining people with disabilities. And we're also working with our clients on how to talk to their employers about any health or medical issues, how to request reasonable accommodation, or if they need to, coming back and talking to their VR counselor if they're struggling in their employment before they lose their job. So again, within our numbers, within our target, but we're looking to continue to build on that to get our rank even higher. And looking at median wages with exit again, we've met our numbers, but we're also putting a lot of focus with some of the career counseling and using the labor market information to make sure our clients are getting equal opportunities to get high-paying, in-demand jobs and occupations. And for a lot of our clients with both significant disabilities, they're being paid with some of our community partners with these job positions. So go out, they work with businesses, and they're helping to make those connections. So we incentivize them to get placements that are of a higher wage and also higher accuracy. Again, that's what we're really trying to drive to get our wage retention numbers up and also the median earning. The other area that I wanted to speak to is with potential employment but also measurable skill gain. We have more individuals who are coming to us and meeting us program. And with vocational rehabilitation, we're also able to provide assistance with any graduate level training programs. So we have more people who are needing more additional specialized training, but also on the other end of the spectrum, we're getting more of our clients connected to vocational and occupational training programs and also the theme of surgery transition. That's just a high level update on what's going on with VR. We're meeting our government, but we're really focused on continuous improvement.
Credentials, meaning that for our measurement, it's not just people with disabilities.
heavily on getting them a high school diploma a lot of the time, and then moving them on. And this, the way that the feds require us to report on credential attainment, it's not just them getting a high school diploma, it's getting a high school diploma and either going on to post-secondary or employment. And so we gave more, this percentage did not capture the percentage of students who got a high school diploma in the program.
To feel like they're here with us.
And right now, I don't think they do.
All right. Can you guys hear better? Spencer, is that better?
That is a ton better, yes.
Hey, start over. Now we're going to start over. So, you can hear Tommy too, just kidding. So we hope that's better and everybody can hear us. Let me see. Sherry Stevens, is that better for you too? Awesome.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. Do you have more to talk about on your 61.5%?
No.
Okay. I grilled her on that. That was me today. Okay. Really? Do you guys have more on performance outcomes?
Any questions?
Any questions? Yes,
they're not going to hear my questions, so you'll have to repeat it. Can you explain how you calculate the median wage? Like, is it over a period of time? What is that?
Sure. So median.
The question.
Yes. So she never asked how we calculate the median wage. And what that is looking at is if an individual worked with us, they stopped receiving services. We look at 2 quarters after they stop receiving services from us. If they were employed, so we only look at the people who are employed, they look at a median over that quarter, what their wages were. And then they do that of all participants and give us the final median.
So is that a quarterly number or a monthly?
Quarterly.
Yep. I also say when you're looking at these indicators negotiated, is an interesting word to use because in my experience, there's little negotiation. They say, this is your target. And you say, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, whatever.
Yes. And
that is very good information. It's not negotiated. It's mandated. Is that the word you're trying to use?
Interesting.
There's been a few, like, percentage points fraction. That's the negotiation.
Yes. Yeah, but they are a little bit lower than in the quarterly wage, but we do work with people who are low income to begin with, or no income, or have a lot of barriers, and so that's why they may seem low.
Have you done any studies regarding the differential between what the services that they're receiving, that amount, versus now the wage, to show that difference that, okay, for the, you know, WIOA adult, the median wage, the outcome over the quarters, 81-87, they still would have been receiving just services. What was that number? To show a pattern of increase or improvement.
Meaning like if they were
no income or $2,000 versus $8,000?
No, it's receiving a welfare situation or, you know, some type of service situation. What was the difference? Because that really is a, you know, would be a very powerful way to say, look how much this has helped to improve lives.
Mm-hmm.
Most people who are coming into these programs do not have income because there's very low income guidelines.
Yes.
And so most don't have any income. The other thing that I would mention is, and I don't know if I can't say, I can't speak for the other programs, but for the top few programs through the Wagner-Piper program, the Department of Labor has a pretty sophisticated way of coming up with the negotiated measures that takes into account the populations you're serving, what your economic situation in your state. It's a very large spreadsheet that basically tells you you're serving this many people of different populations, so we expect you to be able to hit this metric. And it basically gives you, you know, plus or minuses based on the population and your economics in your state. So most of the people, we haven't looked at the difference, but most of the people coming in are not making anything when they start with us.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I would ask that too, that there is an expectation of continuous improvement. So
yes.
Yeah. So you have. Yeah. We'll be ready for the next round of negotiations.
Yes, negotiations. Really quickly, while we have Lindsay up here, she did mention an executive meeting our WIOA narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just going to explain what that is really quick. And Nicole's going to throw a website up there that I'd encourage you guys to look at. But as you know, our WIOA plan that we submit, that's developed by our wonderful DWS and other four partners, is 300 pages. So Lindsay and Heather used what we did with 300 pages and created a 30-page narrative. She's going to explain that a little bit because we have to. It's like an annual report.
Yes. This is part of our annual report. So every year we are required to submit an annual narrative of the work that we do. It serves as a complement to all the data reports that we just said, talked about, and tells the story behind the numbers, tells the things that we're doing inside of our program, the best practices, the innovative ideas. And the best part of the report is it shares the success stories of what we do in the program. So it is posted online on our website. We have it posted there every year. We will include it in the minutes as part of the agenda. We encourage you to go read it and see what we're all doing and the projects and things working on. And especially if you don't want to read all 30 pages, scroll to the almost to the end. It's page like 20 pages, 25, 19
in the index.
Yeah, that's where our customer success stories are. Those are the why we do what we do, and it makes us feel, you know, it tells us the story of what we do and reminds us of the important things that we work on. So, it's a good report. I encourage you to read it.
And with those stories, there's a couple good ones that really show how the core partners are working together mm-hmm. to provide that wraparound service and continuity.
Yeah.
That's the plug of the success mm-hmm. stories.
Yep.
Which you see from the certifications of the One Stop Center. It's full circle.
Yes.
There you go.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. I'm going to have Stephanie just slide over here to seat and present on Workplace Literacy Program. There's nothing in your packet for this, so just pay attention.
I'm just waiting for slides. Well, so I'm Stephanie Patton. I'm Naval Education Coordinator from the Utah State Board of Education. I forgot to introduce myself before. We can go to the next slide. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about workplace literacy. So under the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, workplace literacy is one of our allowable activities. This is my small but mighty team at USBE. Danielle Peterson, Jeff Ojeda, Alex Ellerman, Adam Little, and Eric Mousters. To address just really briefly a couple of myths when you think of adult education, you might think of, go to the version of that, your living skills, independent living skills for adults over the age of 22. That is not what we do. You might also think that we are watercolor classes or other community education programs. That is also not what we do. And we are also not just a GED. While we do help students prepare for a GED, that is not our only or even primary service. What we do, if you'll go to the next slide, our mission is to provide transformative, learner-centered, high-quality, evidence-based education that leads to sustainable employment and personal success. And we do that through three main services. I think that's the next slide. Yes. First of all, adult basic education. So when I say adult basic education, that means instruction to students below a ninth grade academic level. And then we also provide adult secondary completion. And in the state of Utah, that does include a GED, but there's also a 24-credit high school diploma. And we still award more high school credit diplomas than helping students prep for the GED here in Utah. That, by the way, is fairly unique for the state of Utah and something that I feel really privileged to have that we can offer to our students. That's what I want to say. And then the third service that we provide is English language acquisition. And like I said earlier, that's about 40, just over 40% of our students right now. And we provide that to, you know, students from all over the world. I think it's super cool to walk into an adult education program and see, for instance, in the midst of, you know, Russia-Ukraine conflict, a Russian and a Ukrainian sitting next to each other, conversing and having a good relationship. Super cool. Anyway, okay, next slide. Like I said earlier, we served over 23,000 students, 14,000 showed on our federal report. We have 40 programs, mostly in school districts, all over the state, three community-based organizations that are primarily here on the Wasatch Front, and we also have services that are in 27 correctional facilities. And go ahead and, yeah. Just for context, we have about $22 million that are between state legislative funds and federal funds. And to your point, research has shown that if a student participates in adult education for 100 hours, they see on average a $9,000 increase in earnings, and you can see their median income is, you know, about $6,500 for those students. That is a significant increase in wages. Okay, so more pertinent to, that was just a really brief overview of adult education for context, but more pertinent to workplace literacy. This is like adult education activities that can be provided at a workplace site, right? And it can be contextualized to the employer's needs. If you'll go to the next slide, actually. What happens, so some of our programs, you know, an employer, actually employers have come to us and said several times, right, like we have students who, not students, sorry, we have employees who need additional skills. Can you help us get them to where they need to be? And a lot of times that's English language acquisition, right? And so we can go through this, like, kind of process where, hey, let's meet together, let's talk about what your needs are specifically, how to meet those, and create then the design of the class to meet your needs specifically, actually provide the instruction, and then do some evaluation and celebrations. It's been very successful. I'm doing this quick because I don't want to do a great switch time, but if you'll go to the next slide. So we can customize the needs to the employers. Our federal funds allow us a lot of flexibility. Typically, primarily our measurable skill gains that we're reporting on are through academic level gains, where we always do a pretest when students come in, identify where their academic levels are, and then after a certain number of hours of instruction, we redo a post-test and say, hey, have we seen any progress? For these workplace literacy skills, the federal funds allow us to actually flexibility to do a variety of different measurable skill gains, and we don't always necessarily have to do that academic assessment because it doesn't always make sense for the employer's needs. So that's really cool. We can tailor it to their needs, identify what their milestone is, and then backwards design instruction that will meet their needs. If you'll go to the next slide. Really, that's just saying that in more technical terms. So we'll skip that one as well. And again, I said that a lot faster. So to talk about like what we've actually done, UTA came to us, I think it was in 21, where during the pandemic, ridership decreased and they lost a lot of routes, right? And then as ridership started to increase, they didn't have like the employees to meet the demand, right? They needed additional bus operators. And they came to us and they said, we're having these applicants who we would love to hire, but they don't have the English proficiency that they need to be able to qualify. Is there something that we could partner with and build this program? So we did, actually. Granite School District came in, and they provided the teacher that partnered with one of UTA's trainers, and they created a whole, they doubled basically the amount of time a bus operator usually takes to for training to become a bus operator, to add in the English language component and train students in to become a bus operator who did not have, who were not proficient in English when they first applied. And they were actually their employees. It was very successful. They had three cohorts go through. This is one of the first cohorts of students, and a large percentage of those who engaged in the program were actually hired and, you know, became successful employees. Unfortunately, they didn't have the funding on their side figured out. So it's not currently running. They're waiting until they figure out the funding, and then, you know, we'll come back and continue to operate. It was very successful. Yeah.
I just want to share a story related to UTA. I was attending a employer event on innovative solutions for immigration and new Americans and refugees. And so Linda Towns was talking about this program. And you already described the program, but there was an employer in the audience that raised their hand and said, okay, so you're teaching them English so they can get a job, and what if they take those skills and then they go to another company? And I love that Linda, she's not at UT anymore, but I love what she said. She was like, you know what? Oh, darn.
So we've
helped educate somebody with skills that will help them be successful no matter where they go, and we can contribute to the community like that. And I really loved how she responded to that instead of the scarcity mindset of like, oh my gosh, we're going to invest training someone, and what if they leave? And that, you know, was such a really great example of leadership when building these kind of programs and how to respond to just, you know, looks like a silly question, but it's, I think it's, they were saying probably what a lot of employers were thinking when it comes to building their workforce skills. So anyway, I just wanted to share that. I was just happy to be a fly in the room.
It's a really great program, and I'm excited for the possibility of it continuing as soon as they figure out their funding. But UTA is not the only place. If you go to the next slide, we've also had programs at Daly's Bacon, Ultradent, Merit Medical, BB Medical, the Humanitarian Center is kind of like a flagship kind of thing, working with Proxima and the University of Utah Healthcare to create some healthcare pathways as well. I presented actually with the coordinating with Lindsay, we presented this to DWS personnel like a month ago, at the very beginning of December, and already have had some bites from IE Corporation, I think, in Price, where they're working with Carbon's adult education program, or Castlegate Education Center, to create some workplace literacy and some print solutions here in the Valley that's going to work with Granite Granite Peak's adult education. So a great, like, partnership that, like, one meeting and already we have, like, two partnerships going. So it was really great. Anyway, this is maybe under-recognized, but there is this opportunity, as you hear about employers who are needing some help getting employees up to speed, and it doesn't have to be just English language acquisition. That's typically what we've done, but we can do it in other, you know, other ways too, right? We can provide workplace literacy programs, and our programs are really good at it, and they're successful programs. So, any questions?
Okay, what's the transition pathway? So you set up the program, the company doesn't pay for it, and then there's a transfer where they continue to pay for it, or how does that?
Well, they're public funds, so we just provide the instruction through the public funds, and what we usually ask for the employers to provide is incentives to the employees so that they're more bought in and able to participate. So
the UTA example was an incentives question?
Yeah, UTA was paying them a wage while they were going through this program. So they were actually three-quarter time employees while they were doing all the training. So it was a very successful, you know, students were very incentivized to participate. So they were going to get this job at the end, but they were getting paid while they were doing it. Any other questions?
So many thoughts are resurrected. Thank you. Maybe you'll get a couple of more emails after you get something. Okay, Zach is up next. I have heard only positive things so far from the people online about the sound, so it's getting better. And I told them to let us know if it got worse again. So, and I know you're loud. So,
that's
an update.
Thanks, Megan. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, those online. My name is Zach Lovell.
In your packet, sorry. This is what you're looking for. If you're online, this is what you're looking for.
Okay,
go for it.
My name is Zach Lovell. I work for the Workforce Development Division for the Department of Workforce Services. I'm based in eastern Utah, in Price, Utah. I call it the best side of the state, in my opinion. But anyway, that's probably a matter of opinion.
Your colleagues in the back are rolling their eyes.
Oh, they do it all the time. So nothing changed there. On the packet, I just want to highlight a few things and share some additional information that's maybe not included in the newsletter, but I thought would be interesting to add to it. But the spotlight is on the Pathways hiring event with the IRS up in the Ogden area. Just some background. This started a couple years ago with a partnership with recruiting for IRS employees and has progressed. This is now the first time with this Pathways event where they're focusing on seasonal paid internships for high school students age 16 and older and looking at just another way of preparing the next generation of a workforce, getting them interested in different careers. And the IRS has started this up there in Ogden, and then I believe from talking to Helen, they're going to try to expand it to a couple other employment centers in the state as well through how successful this was. So this is neat to see how partnership starts at one level, then it progresses over time as the need progresses. Another spotlight I want to kind of point out is on the second page. It's down in Cedar City with Sneed. I'll come down there where we've been providing a lot of support with their going through a closure. And the support that's not necessarily included here is, according to Amy, at least 10 times now we have gone on-site to the location to work directly with employees that are affected with the closure, with the transition, to help for just one-on-one assistance and looking for the next career. Next question. That's on the flip side. This is the opposite of the hiring side. This is beyond the, unfortunately, when a company goes through a closure, this is also the support we can provide with that. Then kind of in the middle of that second page is a couple of spotlights with the Get the Scoop down in over in Heber City area, 1,500 high school students, and then down in Carbon County, again, another career fair. So these are both kind of career fairs where high schools are bringing in employers from the community, bringing employers who are sharing, hey, here's different career options within our company. Here's the process to apply. Here's the opportunities. Here's different directions you can go within our company. There's a photo there of the highway patrol, for example, down there in Price, showing that with their ladder of how you meet your in the door and with them there. And that's, and again, another way of connecting high school students to what is post high school, what is to look for and go that direction. On the third page, apprenticeships, this was our second annual apprenticeship summit, I believe. We had a good turnout. I'm not sure if this is the first time we had a foreign delegation present, but I was neat to see the Australian delegation present for that. If you want a lot of good details about that, go talk to Scott. He's hiding over there on the wall over there. He'll be happy to give you a lot more details with that apprenticeship. And then I'm going to just briefly spotlight, we have the Workability Career Exploration and Job Fair. Great event. If you've not gone to it, go talk to Leela. You guys want to go to this event. You wanted to share it, that individuals go to it. If you want a lot more details, again, go talk to Leela. But this is something that I would encourage each one of you guys to look at. Happens twice a year, spring and in the fall. A great opportunity to kind of learn and get connected there as well. And then on the very back page, this is some upcoming events coming up. We do also have the Workforce Development Resources map. That has been updated, so if you haven't updated your contacts, that has been. There's been a few changes on that. There'll probably be a few more changes for our next meeting, but just kind of keep an eye on that there. Megan, that's all I have for you today.
Any questions for Zach? Okay. Moving on. We're gonna be okay. We have committee report out. And I think if everybody takes 5-ish minutes, you don't have to take 5 minutes, but you don't get more than 5 minutes. You have at least 5 minutes. Nicole's trying to make this sound better. Are we having everybody come to the front to make it awesome? Okay. So, when I call your name, you need to come to the front. So we'll start with apprenticeships. Zach, still
you're
under a little.
No, it actually it saved me 2 minutes of my time.
There you go.
Zach kind of alluded to the apprenticeship week started November 18th. It was a celebration of apprenticeships. We did have a couple of events for job fairs down south, one in Price, one in Cedar. Or was it St. George? Cedar City. And then the spotlight of that week was that apprenticeship summit that was held on the 19th, well attended, as shown in that flyer, 110 were attendance. It was followed by a job fair there as well, where they had 130 job seekers that came through there as well. So very well attended. That National Apprenticeship Week, it's actually going to change moving forward. So this year, it's going to be celebrated in March, April. So April 30th, and it's going to be celebrated just that day as a National Apprenticeship Day. Moving forward, it's going to go to the week, and then we'll be able to kind of include the summit and some of these job fairs and events in with that moving forward. A couple other things that we've attended. November 14th and 15th, there's the Utah School Counselors Association. This is an event where 600 counselors from all across the state have come up and attended their own counseling event. But it opened up to where apprenticeships could go there and present and talk to these career counselors, any of these counselors that are talking to the students that are guiding them in the direction of pathways. So there's a lot of employers there. We were there representing apprenticeships. I think that's really important place for kind of planting the seed for apprenticeships, because once you teach that counselor the pathways, then they can pass that information along. So that was a very well-attended event. Another fun thing that we had done, and this was just on the 6th of this week, we toured the prison. We've been kind of brainstorming with the prison out there of pathways for people that are getting released from prison and getting them into careers. So this is something that several of the labor trades, we kind of been collaborating and seeing what we can do about not only that transitional period from getting them released, but also maybe some education while they're still incarcerated. And these would be selected individuals that are going to be successful, or you would hope to be. I mean, so it's not just kind of open up to, you know, the whole community there. It's people that are, you know, have lesser charges or on their pathway of getting released. The electrical trade, we actually have a whole first year that we can do virtual, that we can do computer mediated learning. So while they're incarcerated, they could do their whole first year of their apprenticeship of the curriculum while still incarcerated. And then upon getting released, then we could give them that credit and get them started into their second year, get them a career pathway, and hopefully shift their focus of their activities that they had before of, you know, something a little bit more productive and get them out there in the workforce. But we're still working on that. And I mean, if there's people that are interested in that, they have a lot of classrooms out there. Davis is out there right now doing some training, but they do have a lot of opportunities there for employers for that transitional period. Another thing that I've been participating in, we just actually have the GTI or Granite School District Advisory Board. They do have a couple of events that are coming up. One that's coming up here just in a couple of weeks, January 23rd. It's an open house where the students that are taking the CTE courses can bring in their parents. Their parents could come in, see what they're working on, see what they're doing. It's open to employers and apprenticeships. We're going to be there, you know, talking about that pathways that these students can take upon graduating. I've seen a lot of success with that. Sometimes when you're talking to the parents, then you're actually getting inside that kid's head a little bit more. The parents hear about it and say, this is a good thing, kick them in the butt and get them moving in the right direction. So if anybody's interested in that, I could get you the information. I think it's really good for any employers or people that are looking for employment for these high school kids that are coming out of high school. They're also doing a construction trades fair, which is similar, but this one's more as kind of set up as an interview session, getting the kids ready for real life employment. We set it up as an interview environment, so the students are coming to us. We're interviewing them as that we're going to hire them, but we're also explaining the pathways, you know, of apprenticeships, the value of apprenticeships. But that's another good event that Granite is doing. I'm going to be reaching out to Pia Stephanie on that ESL. We've actually converted our whole first year of our apprenticeship over to an ESL format. We have two students that might be getting started into, you know, the program that are that of that path. We've actually got a career event, an open house. We're just down the street at Utah Electrical Training Alliance. But we have an open house tonight, too. And we've advertised on the Spanish radio and, you know, a couple other areas. So we'd be interested to see what kind of exposure we get and people coming in. That's pretty much all I have.
That's a lot to think.
I know.
We're not slowing down in the state of Utah, obviously. And we saw that with the teacher apprenticeship coming on board. We've got the healthcare one you talked about. Michael wants us to go on our next field trip to the prison so we can see what they're doing there. That's on the table right now. So just throwing that out there. Okay, you and Deborah, are you going to do youth first? Thank you so much. Never graciously is pinch hitting for me for Matt. He's south.
This may be a little rough.
It's fine. We just want to know what's going on with you. Give us a little update.
I'll give a quick update. So Matt asked if I could share some information with you from our last meeting and what we're working on. So it's got here.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard because it's like I see you on the computer. Yeah, I'm like, I think that's Scott. We probably met before. I apologize. So Scott came in and he shared with us first about the apprenticeship program. So we're talking all about apprentices today. And Matt's goal, and I think it's a really good goal, is for us to make sure that we're collaborating with the other committees and not working in silos to the extent that there's overlap and dependencies. And this is a perfect one since we're covering youth. And so it was really great to hear from Scott, and we got educated on the program, the programs that exist now around apprenticeship. And I know you've probably shared, Scott, in the past some of the stats, but just to remind everyone, there's over 3,000 occupations in the nation that are eligible for apprentices. And this is just, it creates a strong relationship with the apprentice and the employer. And 93% of the time apprentices stay with employers. So, you know, this is really sticky. It's a great way. It's a good program for youth to actually gain employment and for it to continue on a long-term basis. And I think one of the big takeaways that we got from his presentation, because we were, you know, trying to focus on how we can help through the committee, is that Workforce Services has two apprenticeship navigators that help with the program's registration. They help with navigating the policies and the procedures and et cetera. They're great. They're just, but what he described is they're a great, great resource. And they can always help in bridging, you know, what our needs are in order to actually be able to execute against one of these apprenticeship programs or to develop a program. I asked him the same question I asked about the teaching, because coming from the employer side, I always want to know, what is it going to take? Like, you know, is it worth the squeeze and what's the effort? He commented, I think he said, it's not a long time commitment, and there's resources there for employers to get through that.
Absolutely. Depending on which occupation we're starting, it can be a couple of weeks. If we're starting a whole week from scratch, it can only be a couple of months, and we can have a registered program set up that's peer-based of any occupation.
So thank you. Certainly, thank you for that. So we talked a little bit about that. Gave us contacts for the apprentice, the different apprentice navigators that are available. Matt, so that was a significant amount of time of our last committee. But this meeting was really action-oriented because we went into it. He challenged all of us on the committee to come forward with our two biggest challenges. And so we had a list of challenges that each of us from our perspective were the biggest challenges that we thought might be worth the committee working on. So then we discussed that, debated it, and decided on to expand the apprentice opportunities for youth. And so for us to help with that in any way we can, or actions taken around that continued connection with the navigators. And Matt and Amy are going to connect with Abby before the end of the first week of March committee meeting to talk about next steps associated with that. And then we agreed on our second topic would be on getting youth and adults to complete the FAFSA. And so we spent some time talking about that as well. And Rebecca offered she will be reaching out and getting us a good point of contact to learn more so that we can get educated as a committee on understanding the ins and outs of FAFSA, understanding what the current challenges are, and then also what's in play, like what are the challenges and what's already in play to try and, you know, break down those barriers and improve it. So we realize it's hard. We heard that. Rebecca offered to help. She had a lot of knowledge for us already, and we were hearing about things that had been tried or were in play to try and help increase the completion of FAFSA, but that's going to be our focus. So I think that's it. Hopefully that was...
FAFSA needs to get some of their ducks in a row, too. I'm just kidding. As a parent that struggled with a new college kid, yes.
Yeah, there were some issues with last year. That's cool.
Awesome. Okay.
That's great. Thank you very much. Any questions for you? All right. Tiana, you're up.
And you're the quietest one of all, so you have to come up here.
I'll try to speak up. Okay. The Utah Committee on Employment of People with Disabilities, some of the things that they have been working on is that they, well, and you've had a lot of,
you have a lot of handouts
in your packet. So you might want to look through them.
Lots of things.
And a lot of this is, if you're an employer, you need to really look at these closely because there's a lot of benefits out there that you could gain from. So, and anyway, they held a mentoring event with UTA and Morgan Stanley, and that was in October, and it was very successful. There is a video on the USOR website if you'd like to take a look at that. The Utah State Office of Rehabilitation and the business relations team, they partnered up to do their fall workability career and career fair. And on that, I just want you to know that that was on October 8th, and they had 27 business employers and 320 job seekers. So that's a really good turnout. And so if you're an employer, I know right now it's been a tough market to find people, but this is a great place to go if you're looking for individuals to hire. The business relations team also presented to SHRM, and they kind of were able to share information about the Choose to Work and business relations, the work-based learning for youth, and Utah the Center for Assistive Technology. And then some of the upcoming events that we have and these are in there, so you can go over them. On January 15th, these are dates you just might want to check on your calendar and see if you're able to attend any of these. They've got Cracking the Credit Score February 12th. I'm not going to go into all of these. I'm trying to kind of hurry through these. But on February 12th, they've got another one for investing. That's 12th. February 12th. The 24th to the 7th, Leah is looking for employers who would like to take on mentoring an individual with a disability. She's looking for 1 hour of your time, and it can work on your schedule between there. Just 1 hour of your time, just let her know when, and she will try and match someone up with you that will work with your schedule as well. So reach out to Leah on that one. And then March 11th is one of my favorite events. It's the employer workshop, and this is one that we talked about earlier. It happens twice a year. And there's a sheet in there. Take a look at the sheet. This is topics that they cover in that workshop that I think any employer would find valuable. Registration is at 8:30, and it goes from 9 until 2. I think you'll find it well worth your while to attend that. They provide lunch also, so added bonus. And then on March 25th, there's another Lunch and Learn. And Leah, this one wasn't on there, and I hope you don't mind if I mention the save the date for the Golden Key Awards.
Of course.
It's going to be September 25th this year. And so it's a great event. Leah and her team, they put in a lot of work to make this a wonderful event, so I would encourage everyone to attend. And do you have any questions for me, or is there anything I missed?
I will share that Golden Key nominations will be opening soon, and so I'll make sure that gets out to the committee as well. Knowing business partners that you feel should be recognized for their work in recruiting, hiring, and retaining individuals with disabilities, please make those nominations.
Thank you.
Can you tell us what the hour of time for Flash mentoring? What exactly are we?
1 hour.
Of what? Like, what do you want from me?
And there's a registration. There's two sheets in there. One for mentees and one for mentors. If you want to be a mentor, you would go to that and register. You would list on there the things you're willing and able to do. So mock interview. Looking at their virtual space and being like, hey, that poster behind you, not appropriate for a virtual interview. Hey, dress inappropriately. Your hair is a little messy. Those kind of things would be potential things you could look for. Stephen's actually done mentoring the Flash Mentoring before. Maybe you can share a little bit about your experience.
Yeah, it's just a variety, and it's really, the
individuals we serve really appreciate the opportunity just to better themselves as they're preparing for these interviews and the opportunity to just get some feedback just about what they're thinking and what they're saying and how they're acting. So, I don't think I've ever had one actually go an hour, to tell you the truth. They're more like half an hour, 45 minutes, but very, very positive situation and very good for these individuals as they're reaching out to try to find employment or improve their employment.
Cool. Simple as 1 hour. You find the time. You schedule. I'll link it up with the individual. You schedule the time that works for both of you, and you find that 1 hour virtually.
Okay.
Anything else?
Slight nudge to encourage you to look at your schedules that week. So let me tell you, or we go here.
You can't get the mention if there's a business one. So there should be two flyers in there. One is for the mentee, and one is for businesses. If you go to the business one and go to the code or the link, you can register that.
Right at the bottom, it's also the mentor registration.
Okay. Cool. Jane. Sorry, should it? Just in the operation.
Yeah.
You're on.
I think one of the benefits of going towards the last is that everybody will say everything I want to say because the career pathways also jumped on the apprenticeship bandwagon. So, apprenticeships is kind of leading the way. Last year, the career pathways committee, we kind of want to identify three or four lanes we wanted to operate in and see what type of impact we wanted to make in the community. And we felt like we had those identified, but then we had a combined meeting with the apprenticeship committee, and we had a very robust conversation. About 30 people were online. Apprenticeship committee kind of led the way as Career Pathways has kind of shared ideas. We brainstormed how we can collaborate more in the future. And it really led to some great discussions about how we can support our youth and all the apprenticeship opportunities are coming up. The Career Pathways committee, I think we have a good robust amount of resources, people that work for organizations or connected organizations that can provide, resources for building up career pathways. So I feel like we should start doing these combined collab meetings a lot more often, because I think that can really be, more productive going forward. But, it makes my presentation a little shorter because we were basically just kind of listening to Michael's team and see what we can offer them. So. That was kind of nuts.
No, I think it's a great, just reminder, we brought it up at the end of last year about, and we talk about it all the time about how our interest in those committees, remember that the majority of the committees are mandated in the law. And so we have to have the committees. But then as we start talking and doing, we're like, well, there's some overlap in those. And so we talked about having combined meetings. It looks like it happened last quarter. Lindsay and some of the other liaisons and team are going to try and figure out how we can schedule the collaborative meetings between the operations is a little bit of an outlier. It's probably going to hang out by itself. But I think the other four committees, there's some definite overlap. And so we're going to figure out how with not trying to increase the amount of times you're meeting, but figuring out how to keep those meetings collaborating a lot. It sounds like I wasn't able to attend, but the Career Pathways Committee / Apprenticeship Committee meeting, he said there's like 30 people on a call learning together. So just more heads together and figuring out. I think we'll see more of that coming through 2025 and finding ways to collaborate. So
yeah,
working. Questions, Career Pathways? Okay, I did, because of how many, thank you, Jason. Kim, you're up. Sorry, operations on the edge.
Should be pretty fast. We talked about the American Job Center Recertification coming up in 2025. We have Austin probably in March, and then we have St. George probably around June, and then the fall, around September-ish, we'll have Spanish Fork and Lee Heights. We have four coming up this year, so we talked about that. And then the other thing that we talked about that is really important is the criteria that we use to recertify the American Job Centers, and it's the responsibility of the board
to review the criteria and make any changes and then approve any changes that are made every 2 years. And so it's that time again. And you guys might remember we talked about this in October, that the operations committee reviewed them. And on the operations committee, we have all the partners, WIOA partners, the agency partners on that committee, as well as the board members. And they recommend that we make no changes this year. So, Megan, this is your opportunity.
We've got a quorum anymore.
To be on the quorum.
Oh,
well, we can send it out in an email.
We might have to. I'm looking. I don't think I have a quorum anymore online. Maybe I do. Three online.
Oh.
So we know. So watch for an email with forum. I still run that. I had so many people online that we were using. So watch for an email to come in the next few days because we need to get it approved, right?
Yeah, let's just this month. I think we did. So yeah.
Watch for an email to come from me. Our recommendation, based on the operations committee recommendation, is we keep the criteria the same for this year. We have the four centers to do this year, so we do need to ratify that. But we can't give people stitch. So we'll need to, I'll just push an email out and get a vote.
Sounds like,
sorry. Any questions
for operations? We're just,
are we right there? Did you count?
Yeah.
We're okay. All right. I need a motion to keep the criteria for the one-stop centers the same as it's been going forward for this year.
Motion.
Yeah, motion. Sean, second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Excellent. So Ogden St. George, Spanish Fork, and Lehigh coming up this year. If anybody's itching to go to any of those places, let Kim know so she can get you on the list. We do try to have at least three board members at each one of those. Four would be great, but at least three. Okay? Yes.
So part of the operations, there's a teeny tiny committee on it called the Employee Engagement. Employee work group that I'm part of. And the idea there is how do we help broadcast all this great work and all the great services, right? Because it's by clearing employees to employers, businesses don't know about them, and there's all these amazing services. And so I would say that the committee is pretty underrepresented with actual business leaders. So if any of the board members are dying to get involved in a business representative, not upstate.
So yeah, the industry ones. Yep.
So the industry board members. But also you can have, I could also have people who are not board members. So if you know somebody in the industry who would be willing to give feedback, it's just like 1 hour every 3 months. LaTanya Howell, for example, SHRM, she's on the SHRM board, is on it. So I do think it could benefit from some additional industry perspectives. So I wanted to put that pitch out there to come join me.
Sarah, Abby, I would like to be part of that. If you'll add me to the work group for that piece of operations. I know, as you're talking, I'm like, it's almost like the board needs to go on the road, like a road show, and like get all of our little towns and like pull all the people that we know together for like.
And those are the ideas we're talking about. But we need more industry folks to weigh in.
Yeah.
Say this is how.
It's almost like we need a really enticing little road show.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
Or we could do it.
I wish I didn't have a day job sometimes. I mean, I love my day job so much. I love my day job. But sometimes when I get to these, I'm like, I wish I had more time to do stuff. So. Thank you. That's great. Any other things? Okay. I do have one more thing. I'm so sorry. For those of you online, one more thing. What are we doing? Moving it or not moving it? Okay. I'm going to put a caveat and let you know soon, but your October meeting may move up a week because Stephen Lindsay decides to move
the one Utah Summit one way or the other every year. Yes, I'm calling him out on it every time. So he just keeps moving around, and I keep thinking I'm okay, and then he schedules the next year, and I'm not. So October, with the caveat, might move. Just letting you know. But I hope you'll come down to the one Utah Summit and see her. It's awesome. So with that, and if you have anything, okay. Public comment? Never had any in 10 years.
You did that one.
Oh, we did one time. That's right. I apologize. We did have one time. I apologize. Okay. I need a motion to adjourn. Excellent.
Adjourn.